Now, straight from the headlines, bringing you our latest top newsmakers. This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, recording at our studio in East County. Today, my very special guest is Pierre Beauregard, known as Pete. Pete is a candidate running in the 50th Congressional District for Duncan Hunter's seat. He is a Ramona rancher. He's got a fascinating resume here. He's been a cowboy, a rodeo bull rider, a Navy corpsman, meaning a medic. He has a biology degree. He likes to hunt, fish. He's been an advocate for peace and a Bernie Sanders delegate, and he is a card-carrying Democrat. Pete, welcome to the show.
Oh, thanks, Mary.
Now, that is a fascinating bio. I'm curious, out of all these amazing things that you've done, what compelled you now to step forward and run for Congress?
Well, if you look at our congressman, he's given us an experience of a politician that we don't want to see in our in our Congress. When I was at the Philadelphia Democratic Convention, I started talking to one of the other delegates, and we got onto the subject of Junior, and I told him I always felt that we were being embarrassed constantly by Duncan Hunter. Anytime he would get on TV, he would say something totally ridiculous and definitely untrue, and something that just didn't fall with my values as a constituent, and I want to see him change. I want to see him out of there.
Yeah, we should note, we're doing this interview at a time when the Justice Department, it's just come out, is doing a criminal investigation of Congressman Hunter for campaign finance violations, and according to a Union Tribune report, there have been 4 cases in modern history where the Justice Department asked the Congressional Ethics Committee to put an investigation on hold because of a criminal investigation involving campaign finance issues like this. And in 2 of those cases, the former member of Congress is now behind bars in jail. Another one is getting ready to go on trial. And the 4th one has a grand jury convened to find out, you know, whether charges will be filed. So Hunter's the 5th one to be in this situation. We'll see. Are you prepared to run sooner should there be a sudden vacancy in a special election?
Well, the anxiety level has gotten up a little because we are, you know, seeing the possibility that he might have to either resign or he'll go in full blast and try to defend himself and could get convicted.
I'd like to start by asking you, you've been a medic, like Congressman Hunter, who's also a military veteran. I'm sure that you're supportive of military and veterans members, you know, getting good health care and good care for them.
Oh, absolutely, yeah.
But I'd like to ask you, as somebody who's been a military medic, do you believe that more should be done for our active duty military and our veterans to meet their medical needs? And are there things you would do that Congressman Hunter has not done?
For the people that are just getting out of the service right now, there is a big challenge to get them into the system. I've been with the VA hospital for about 20 years now, and it's the best health care I've ever had. There was no way would I go into civilian health care and for my particular problems.
I mean, that's actually, some would call that socialized medicine, but the VA is one of the biggest health care providers.
Well, you can stick
anyway.
Any word you want to it, but the thing is that the VA, number one, should not be privatized. Number two, they should have an increase of personnel there. The wait times in between your visits can be a little lengthy, and I believe that's due to a shortage of personnel. And the nurses there are great. I mean, there's nothing like waking up out of a surgery to a good nurse. They're dedicated. I support the nurses union to get in there and get the VA to, number one, bring their salaries up to par where they can be competitive salaries. And also more nurses available for patients that are at the VA.
Okay. Now, I understand when you got out of the military that you actually helped establish a clinic of some sort. Tell us about that.
Yeah, it was my last year, and I was with the 3rd Marine Air Wing, and I got word that there was a free clinic being formed. So I jumped in my car and drove to it, and it was this little storefront clinic, And the first thing I walked in there, the first thing that was handed me were three or four charts. He said, here, these are your patients. I said, don't you want to meet me first? You know, and there was it was kind of frantic, you know, but we actually did create a clinic that took care of the street needs, general medicine.
So it wasn't just veterans, it was...
No, this was not veterans at all, no. This was just a street clinic.
Mm-hmm. So for low-income folks.
And we had a lot of birth control patients, and this was before Roe versus Wade, so we did have a protocol for young women that, you know, when they made their choice to do what, you know, what they wanted. And also, we took care of... there was a lot of STDs going around at that time in Orange County.
Yeah.
And the health department did fund us to help take care of that problem.
So the healthcare system has changed radically from those days in a lot of ways. Of course, we've recently seen the big battle in Congress over what to do about healthcare. Congressman Hunter has been a very vocal advocate of repealing Obamacare and was a supporter of replacing it with the Republican plan, some would call it Trump Care. What are your views on that bill, and how would you work to improve access and, I should say, affordability on health care? And we should note here that Congressman Hunter was very clear. He stated at his town hall that he does not believe in health care as a right for everyone. He does not believe in guaranteed health care. He just thinks there should be access.
Well, there's a lot of things Junior doesn't believe in. I believe Medicare for all. You know, about 45,000 people die, adults die a year of lack of health care.
Yeah.
We've had people lose their homes, go into bankruptcies because of an illness in the family. And 3/4 of those people had health care insurance.
Yeah. You may not know this, but Congress not long ago took away the option to discharge medical debt through bankruptcy. So now you can't get rid of that medical debt. It follows you for the rest of your life or until you can pay it off.
Well, let's see, you know, how many mean things can we put in there to get what the Republicans want? And basically, if somebody's denied something, that means somebody gets something. And I think the Republicans are looking to gain a lot of money.
Now, what happened with the Republican health care bill, for listeners that may not be familiar with it, it died without a vote. President Trump tried to blame Democrats on that, but of course Republicans have the overwhelming majority in the House and Senate, so could have passed this without a single Democratic vote. But there was a rift in the Republican Party between somewhat more moderate ones and then the Freedom Caucus. Mm-hmm. And they thought the bill didn't go far enough. They wanted to take away the requirement for health care policies to cover maternity benefits, to cover newborn baby care. They wanted to further gut Medicaid, a lot of other things there.
Yeah. There's just not enough butterflies to pull their wings off. You know, this is the kind of people that think this way. And I know that there's a lot of good Republicans out there that don't feel this way. It's ridiculous.
Yeah. And the other side of the coin, of course, is Obamacare certainly got a lot of people health care who could never afford it before. You know, millions and millions of people now have health care who couldn't before. A lot of people, it's much more affordable than it was. There are some people in the middle that are paying more, and particularly some older folks, so it's not perfect. You know, there's those who would say we should fix Obamacare, not replace it. The Republicans want to just repeal it, and who knows what they want in its place, something worse, not better, really, as far as coverage. You're advocating Medicare for all. So
yes.
Can you tell us a little bit more about how you envision that working?
Well, yeah, Medicare for all. I mean, we have it. It's working. It's probably one of the best healthcare plans, period. You know, we're the only country in the industrialized world that does not have public healthcare.
Correct.
And if you look at the money that is spent, $400 billion, I believe it's $400 billion that we could save if we didn't have to pay the high profits to the stockholders of healthcare companies.
We could negotiate for cheaper prescription drug prices
by all means.
VA already does, right?
Yeah, what a shame that was that we didn't pass, I believe, Proposition 61, it's called.
How would you pay for it? The devil's advocate question would be Medicare for All sounds wonderful. Where do you get the money to fund it?
52% of our budget goes to the military. And, of course, we need a good active military readiness at all times, equipment that's the latest equipment, but the amount of money that we're blowing on that budget is just totally absurd. A case in point, I have a friend that was a contractor over in Iraq and in Baghdad. He was an accountant. I've seen photographs of him carrying away bundles of coming off a pallet of cash up to the tune of $4.4 billion, and they put it on ice cream trucks where they drove it out to the desert to these different tribal leaders and just giving them cash. Do we have any accounting of that cash? No, we don't.
It's gone missing, billions.
Yeah, all waste. It's all waste. You know, we could fund Medicare just a fraction of that budget alone.
Yeah, and the Trump administration, of course, is their current budget proposal is to increase military spending by 10%, cut just about everything else drastically. You have talked about part of your platform is to get money out of politics. Can you talk about that?
Yeah, that's the first part of my platform. Like I said, every one of my items on the platform is I've had some experience, some physical experience, and that was during Occupy. Our main subject is getting big money out of politics. Overturn Citizens United. You know, the thing is that corporations are not people. You know, slavery was a fiction that people were property. And corporations now, their fiction is that corporations are people. The amount of money from the Koch brothers, from the oil industries, from Alec. You know, Alec has those people there. They're actually drafting up legislation for Congress just so, you know, it'll satisfy what their needs are. So, no, money out of politics. I just want to tell you one thing, Miriam. Reagan and Carter, when they ran, you know, their presidential campaigns, the only money that was allowed in that campaign was that $1 that we put that check by on our income tax return. And that's how those
public financing. Right. So they didn't take all this money from the corporations and everywhere else.
Right. But that was changed by Reagan.
It's interesting. I was chatting the other day with a very diehard conservative Tea Party member, and he was saying, he was agreeing with you basically, that the biggest problem we have in America today, he said, is all the money in politics that, you know, it's hard to know if your representative is acting in your interest or the interests of somebody that gave them a pile of money. Certainly the pharmaceutical companies, for example, the drug companies have given a lot of money to Congress, and lo and behold, we can't get any kind of medical reforms through that control those prescription drug prices. We see this a lot in military spending. Duncan Hunter's father, Duncan Hunter Sr., was embroiled in various controversies over military procurement contracts. Both he and his son sat on the Armed Services Committee. Hunter Sr. chaired it at one point. Do you think that money, specifically in the Hunter campaign, has influenced his votes on some things?
I don't think actually hardly any influence at all on Junior's part. I think that was already decided before a long time before he got into office. His dad, you know, probably told him, here's a good way to make a lot of money, and that is to finance wars. There's a lot of equipment that goes over there, a lot of procurement. You can't imagine how much no-bid contracts and how much is being made off the blood of our veterans.
Yeah, very troubling. You've been an advocate, actually, for a Department of Peace. Explain to us how that would work. I mean, does that mean you would never support any war, or does it mean that you believe we need to be more cautious before committing our young men and women to a military conflict to look at other alternatives?
I would never support a war because war is failure of us being able to figure things out. I mean, of course, we have, you know,
even if we were bombed, if it was Pearl Harbor or something.
That's just it. I mean, yeah, if we were defensively, of course, that's why we have a military is to protect us.
Okay. But you don't support this concept of the proactive war, the Bush doctrine, so to speak, that we can just go out there and
bomb a country.
Well,
these are all phony wars, you know.
Proactively.
We fought a war in Vietnam that was based on lies. The truth came out on the Tonkin Gulf incident.
Happened again with the first Iraq war where we found out that there were no weapons of mass destruction like we were originally told.
Yeah, and plus that was a bunch of BS in the first place because Bush just wanted to go after Saddam Hussein. He tried to tie Iraq with 9/11, and their lying mill just in the media just kept on working and working on the public until he made most of the public believe, yeah, it was Iraq's fault, and that's why we should go to war. And it was all a lie.
I would like to hear a little bit more about your views on immigration, which is certainly in the news right now. And you come at this from a different, an interesting perspective in terms of being a rancher in a part of the county, Ramona, where you've said there are a lot of undocumented workers on many of those ranches up there. Tell us what your views are. I mean, on the one hand, we have a president that seems to want to deport everybody that he can, even taking mothers away and deporting mothers of young children that are citizens here who've done nothing wrong other than come over the border 20 years ago. And on the other hand, we have, you know, sanctuary cities, in some cases, that are refusing to cooperate even if somebody's committed violent felonies. Where do you fall on that spectrum?
A while back, we had the Bracero program. Mm-hmm. And now I have, well...
And we should say that for those too young to remember, the Bracero program was basically a work program,
right,
to allow people from Mexico or wherever to come up here and work legally, maybe picking crops or whatever work needed to be done.
Right, and there's provisions for them to, you know, have a housing up here for them. Yeah. But now...
Pay taxes.
Yeah, and mm-hmm. But now it's... Trump and his group have painted with a wide stroke that undocumented workers are all criminals. I mean, that's basically how they feel about it.
And, yeah. And a fat little fact check here. The reality is that the crime rate among undocumented immigrants in this country is much lower than the crime rate among citizens. So really, it's just a fallacy. Not to say there's never a crime, but it's a very, very minuscule percentage.
Well, I run into these ranch hands, and we talked, and I know some of them are undocumented because they would say so. And who are they working for? They're working for these ranchers that are part of, you know, our local Tea Party.
So they're hypocrites. Tea Party guys.
That's a character flaw that is well accepted in the certain circles of the Republican Party. Hypocrisy's is definitely the state here. And
so how would you have sort of a more humane and rational approach to this?
Well, I would just do a permit program. You know, have them come up like the Bracero program, come up and work. They do contribute to our economy. They share the same values. I mean, they share the same values as any family would that are, you know, head of the family would, taking care of their family, but they don't have them around them. They have to leave them in Mexico. And so what they do is they work here and will send their money back to Mexico, but they spend a large part of their money here. Mm-hmm. And I'll tell you, there's not one ranch hand that I have met, and I've met a lot of them, that I wouldn't have a problem over at my house.
Okay. Thank you very much for sharing your views on that. Let's move on and speak about climate change and environmental protections. Congressman Hunter is essentially a climate change denier, as is Donald Trump. He's also proudly spoken about voting to abolish the Environmental Protection Agency, which was established to protect clean air and water, endangered species, and habitat. Of course, we have a lot of public lands out here, and those are also under assault by the current Congress that wants to privatize, sell off public lands, allow, you know, fracking and drilling and who knows what else. Where do you stand on those issues?
Junior, he doesn't have the right to comment on the science of climate change. He only listens to whatever somebody tells him or he gets off of Breitbart, or I'm sure he hasn't read one book on any sciences that are focused on the climate change.
Now, you do have a biology degree.
Yeah, I do. I have a biology degree, but I mean, what I use for that, see, I'm a rancher. I'm a permaculture farmer. And what I do is I try to reduce the amount of carbon that's being released in the atmosphere.
Good for you.
And this is done by plowing techniques that I've borrowed from the Australians. This has to do with my cattle and how I incorporate their contribution into the soil. The same with chickens, you know. They contribute a lot of fertilize a lot of fertilizer into our soil where I can grow grass all year round. I can also capture water much better than a regular farmer does that just disks his land. I can capture thousands and thousands of more gallons of water in my pasture more than anybody else in Ramona. And that's due to the techniques that I use in plowing.
Very interesting.
Yeah.
So does that mean that you would stand up for taking action on climate change?
Well, absolutely. We have to do something before the end of this century. I mean, we're losing the amount of ice that's being melted on the Arctic Circle is incredible. And we've seen in the last 50 years such a spike in global warming than compared to all the years before when we've had any type of record keeping.
What about the EPA? Would you vote to protect it?
Oh yeah. Now see, the EPA they haven't been in power that long.
Nixon. It was actually started under President Nixon, believe
right.
it or not, and it was in response to all of the contamination in the environment. We had rivers that were so polluted they were catching on fire. We had all of the issues with DDT and pelicans dying and so forth. Basically, the corporations run wild, and so it was decided that we needed an EPA to, put some controls in place.
Well, you know, absolutely. The EPA is a very important part in helping protect this planet. Now, there are some issues, I'm sure, that could be, tightened up, and a lot of the bureaucracy, we don't need.
So you'd be open to looking at maybe specific regulations and whether there might be something that needed to be pared back, but not just throwing the baby out with the bathwater, so to speak.
Okay, here's a point that I have to make. My oldest brother, we were born in Massachusetts, and we were born in this town called Wilbraham. This was back in the late 40s. And we had a creek that ran behind the houses that we were living at, and they were being contaminated by some of the textile industries that were in the area. And I believe that my oldest brother that died from cancer when he was 16 had developed cancer when I heard the history about that.
Oh, sorry to hear that.
From that kind of pollution. I mean, he died of a cancer that was just unknown for a young boy like that to get. So, I believe that it was contamination in the water there. My other brothers, we weren't old enough to really drink the amount of water that my older brother did. So,
listeners, if you've just tuned in, we're speaking with Pierre, known as Pete Beauregard, who is a Democrat running for Congress against Congressman Duncan Hunter in the 50th Congressional District. Now, Pete, another issue that's on the minds of a lot of people these days is student debt, which just seems to be getting higher and higher and higher. I know I've seen this myself. I went through public schools, colleges, universities, and what my kids had to pay to go through. It's just staggering. What ideas do you have to help the young people of today better afford a college education without being saddled with a lifetime of debt?
When I had my student loan, the banks were predatory loan practices. I finished my degree when I was 50 years old. I had to go back to college and finish my degree. I had to get a student loan. My student loan was for $20,000. As soon as I got my degree, I had to start paying back my loan in 3 months. I lost my job, and the debt was just building up, even though I was paying the minimum on my loan. So
it's like legal loan sharking,
yes,
basically, for
kids.
Well,
that was exactly my comment is legal loan sharking. And finally, my final debt came up to $40,000. Which I have paid off. I did get an opportunity to do
good
that.
Good for you. Now they're saying that they can garnish your wages for Social Security. You're ready to retire. You're not working anymore. And they can come take your money, some of it, to satisfy unpaid student debt.
Absolutely. When are they going to open up prisons, debtor's prisons?
Probably next.
We definitely should afford college to our students, a free college for state.
So you support the Bernie Sanders plan of free
right.
college tuition for everybody.
That's right. And how could that be paid for? Bernie Sanders said is that he would like to tax Wall Street because Wall Street benefits from these students that go through college and stuff like that. And
interesting. Yeah, I heard a stat today that under the Republican plan, it's not Wall Street specifically, but that the top 1% of our earners, those people that are making like $13 million and up or something like that, would be getting a double-digit tax break on this, high double-digit tax break on this tax plan of his, while the poorest Americans would be paying more. It just seems like, you know, maybe there's some room there for some tax sanity.
Yeah.
So that we're not, you know, gouging the middle class or the poor. We're making it enough that even a somewhat well-to-do person can have enough to invest in businesses and creating jobs. But, you know, if you're a multimillionaire billionaire, maybe you don't need a double-digit tax cut when our kids are being gouged for student loans.
Oh, absolutely. And the corporations that are enjoying their tax deductions. But I just feel that talking about the student debt that we have now, that these banking practices has created a generation of indentured servitude, people that are slaves to the banks, you know, and it's just no way out. You can't go down the bankruptcy route.
Yeah, I've always thought our children are our investment. You know, they're our future. It seems like we should be doing a lot more to empower and enable them to go be the entrepreneurs of tomorrow, to start a business, to be the scientists, be the leaders. And it's awfully hard to do that when you're saddled with this, this just crippling mound of debt that our generation didn't have to go through, you know, unless you went to school much later. But
right. My daughter is going to graduate this year from a state university. And I would not allow her. I told her, no way are you going to take out a student loan.
Yeah.
I said, I will give you the money before you even get near those people.
Just to show you how crazy it's gotten, my brother actually has a degree from Harvard, a master's degree from Harvard. And he went in the 70s. And back then, his tuition was about $1,000.
Oh, yeah.
$1,000 a semester. You know?
Yeah, for me too.
Now, I mean, when my son went through UC Berkeley, we're talking $24,000 a year, and it's gone up even more for the tuition and the, you know, the room and board. And some of these kids, it's 40, 50, then, I mean, that's the public's, our public schools. So I think we can do better. I'm with you on that one. It's East County. A lot of people out here are hunters, or they're concerned about self-defense out there. Where do you stand on gun rights?
I support the Second Amendment, and I am a gun owner. I'm a hunter. I belong to Ducks Unlimited. That's what I usually like to do every year. I haven't missed a year yet in the last 30 years.
Mm-hmm.
I do own several guns. I own automatics, and I own black powder. I do express that we should definitely have a background check, a thorough background check. Nobody should be able to buy a gun unless they have been checked to see if they are mentally competent to have a gun, or if they're not a criminal.
Not on terrorist watch list.
Yeah, or a terrorist, you know, not that the terrorists are going to go down.
No, there's actually a bill, and I mean, they couldn't get that through this Congress to limit weapons purchases. It's automatic weapons purchases by people on the terrorist watch list.
And we have, you know, it's funny that, you know, Obama hasn't taken away our guns yet, or either as Clinton.
So you're not going to go take anybody's guns away.
Yeah.
Okay.
And that's ridiculous. But you know, there is one thing that I am for, and that is outlaw semi-automatic weapons that can be altered into a full automatic machine gun. There are parts available. They're sold legally in other states, and all you have to do is just to get a few parts, and you can take certain semi-automatic rifles and pistols and turn them into full automatic machine guns. It's crazy.
Where do you stand on protecting the rights of women, which we're seeing eroded in states across the country right now, a lot of hard-fought battles? I'm not just talking about abortion, but even things like contraception access now, or having healthcare policies that will include maternity coverage, for heaven's sakes, seem to be at risk with the current Congress that we have.
How long is it going to take us to pass the ERA? How long
Equal
is
Rights
it,
Amendment.
And, yes, and how long are we going to wake up that a room full of white men don't sit around and make decisions about women's wombs? You know, when I was with the Free Clinic, this was before Roe versus Wade, we did make abortions available to people.
I imagine, you know, it's a difficult decision. There seems to be this mindset out there that women who get abortions, you know, on the right wing.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, women who get abortions are somehow bad people, they're sluts, they should just keep their legs together and they wouldn't have a problem. But,
that's ridiculous. Yeah. There's nothing more heartbreaking than to see a young girl that has found herself in a situation that she's pregnant, that she's not capable of taking care of a baby, either as a family, either as the boyfriend, and then to have to make a decision that they're morally concerned about. Some people can make the decision, and there is no religious factor involved, but it's still a horrible decision, and they don't just go to have abortions because, you know, it's the easy way out. Mm-hmm. And this is why we should have a real comprehensive birth control education program.
Yeah, you know, a lot of people don't know, but the number one reason why women give when they go to get an abortion, and it isn't just single women, a lot of times it's married women, you know, who go in seeking these, the number one reason they give is that they can't afford to have a baby. They can't afford, you know, what is it, $20,000, $40,000 to give birth to a child if you don't have insurance, for example. And let alone the cost of raising that child. So if we had health care, if that was taken off the table and they didn't have to worry about the cost of maternity care, the cost for well baby checkups, things like that, that actually alone would reduce abortions without legally banning them, but it would simply make people who maybe would care for the child if they could keep it.
Right. I could feel the anguish. I just felt the anguish that these patients go through. It's ironic, when Roe versus Wade did get passed, you should have seen the influx of doctors that wanted to volunteer at our free clinic so they could get a part of this business. And these were doctors that were known to be totally against abortions. We had our staff out several of these doctors before they were saying, oh, it's just, you know, immoral. But as soon as they found out that they could get into this business, everybody from eye surgeons to ENT physicians wanted to set up an abortion room in their office. And as far as when I was in charge of, you know, I saw the situation, they would have no part of our clinic at all.
Yeah, so it needs to be safe.
It was still safe. I mean, it's still safe.
Well, and yet when it was illegal, I'm old enough to remember before we had Roe versus Wade, and there were some people who couldn't get them and wound up going to Mexico. They would go to back alley, or they'd go to back alley butchers here, and women bled to death. They got infections that left them sterile for the rest
Absolutely.
Of their life. A lot of young girls that were afraid to tell mom or dad would go south to Tijuana. In very unsterile conditions often. So, I mean, that is something we could certainly see happen again if the Supreme Court were to overturn Roe versus Wade.
Right.
But as we've mentioned, it goes beyond that. It's even birth control and access to it. You would think if you don't want abortion that you would want people to have access to birth control to prevent unwanted pregnancies.
Well, what we did was we had pregnancy counselors and we had birth control counselors. Mm-hmm. So anytime a person came in for birth control, they would have to go through an hour course or a little class that we provided and going over birth control and also going over the aspects if they had to go and get an abortion, what that was like. You know, it wasn't taken lightly. You just hand out birth control pills. And also schools in that area had asked us to go around and lecture to the senior classes, junior classes, you know, about this. So it was a pretty good program. But nowadays you have this element which is we don't want birth control discussed because that's going to promote, you know, promiscuity. And that's going to cause a big problem. And when they have this kind of behavior, you know, when they have this kind of guidance in some of these, I hate to say it, Christian schools, that they had seen when they don't have these sex classes, that the rate of STDs start to climb because there's no formal education on
right.
how to prevent these things. And
that's
the rate
right.
of pregnancy goes up because they have no formal education on how to prevent pregnancies.
Yeah, exactly. Why do men think that they should be passing laws that affect women? I mean, to me, it seems like a strong man shouldn't need to control women. You know, they need to control women's choices. You know,
it's funny if you want to bring men in this. I mean, the way it is now, birth control pills. They want to say, well, we don't want to fund birth control pills in Medi-Cal or
but they'll fund Viagra for men.
Yeah, but they're going to fund Viagra
for
men.
What do they think this leads to?
And that's just absolutely ridiculous.
Yeah, exactly. One one other topic I wanted to ask you about. There's probably just one thing I can think of that you might actually have in common with Duncan Hunter Sr., and that's that both of you have lost a home to wildfires. In his case, I believe it was the Cedar Fire. In yours, it was the 2007 Witch Creek Fire. Are there lessons that we should learn from that about what the federal government should be doing and what you as a member of Congress could be doing to make sure that our region is protected as much as possible from future wildfires? Because every fire chief I've ever interviewed always says it isn't a matter of if we'll have another major firestorm, it's when.
Absolutely. My fiance and I, what we've done is we built a house called a passive house. And that passive house is constructed of non-combustible materials on the outside and mostly on the inside too. We have windows that are from Germany that are literally bulletproof in case there's a wind, you know, like there was back in the Witch Creek Fire, 120 miles an hour. And I think federally that we could mandate that houses that are in high-risk areas be constructed with materials that will not burn.
Good idea, but even then, it doesn't always work. I know our publisher had a steel-framed house that wasn't supposed to burn. It did. That fire was almost as hot as Hiroshima out there in Wildcat Canyon, and it burned to the ground. It was amazing. So, I mean, it's a good idea. It certainly will help in many fires. But beyond that, what about standing up for the firefighting protection? We've seen some efforts by the Trump administration to slash the National Forest Service budget, and obviously there's a lot of firefighters, federal firefighters, that work fighting forest fires in our area, which can burn into the communities.
One of the big contributing factor, I think, is climate change.
Yeah,
I mean we've got these forests now that, like you said, are infested with a bark beetle, and which just destroys trees and it just turns them into fuel.
Yeah, and they come in when we've had years of drought, which of course,
absolutely,
arguably is caused by climate change.
Yeah, well, I mean, as far as the National Forest Service is concerned, how can we take and dismantle those and then expect to have, you know, vital forests for us that they have a timber logging industry and they're so eager to keep those forests in good shape. But when it comes to the national forest, it's like, who gives a darn? What you've got is just a huge territory of fuel. Mm-hmm. To have a National Forest Service to help maintain some of the areas that are, you know, in jeopardy. I mean, how can you say no to that?
Yeah. We're starting to run short on time, so I just have a couple of last questions for you. One of them is, where can people go to find more information about your candidacy?
We have a website. And it's Beauregard4Congress.com. So it's Beauregard, Congress.com.
Okay. And listeners, for those who turned in the middle of the show, we've been speaking with Pierre, known as Pete Beauregard, who's running for Congressman Duncan Hunter's seat out here in the 50th Congressional District. He's a rancher from Ramona. He's been about everything, I think, a cowboy, a bull rider in the rodeo, a Navy corpsman. He's got a biology degree. He hunts, he fishes, and he's been a Bernie Sanders delegate. I guess I would like to end by asking you this. The one side, when I talk with people in the Tea Party, or people on the liberal or progressive side of the aisle, the one thing most of them agree with is that one of the biggest problems we see in Congress is all of the influence of the special interests. So what makes you convinced that you will be strong enough to stand up against the lobbyists and all the special interests, all the pressure back there in Washington that can often take even an honest person and, you know, get them to start doing things that maybe are not in the best interests of their constituency or America?
You couldn't ask a better question than that. My first motto is country over politics. My country over party, too.
Do you think your experience as a bull rider is going to toughen you up and make you prepared?
Well, you know, I started bull riding when I was 30 years old, and that's when people start finishing bull riding. I did it for a couple of years, and I just like the challenge. I like the lifestyle. But I'll tell you, once you ride a 2,000-pound bull, why in the hell should I be afraid of you?
Okay. We're going to end it on that note. I want to thank you so much for taking the time to join us today on the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ, the Network for Social Justice.
Thanks, Marion.